Blog Talk Radio.
Dr. Doom wears body armor to conceal his own mangled form, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That was me beneath the armor. The Hulk. A normal guy one minute, a rage of emotions the next. Just like me when I thought about what I'd given up.
So you created each character as a way to deal with your one big regret.
Yeah, the girl that got away. Look, do yourself a favor, Brody. Don't wait, because all the money, all the women, even all the comic books in the world, they can't substitute for that one person.
I don't know, all the comics in the world?
Trust me, true believer. Well, good talking to you.
Keep up all the good work.
You keep reading them. I'll keep writing them.
Hey, Stan.
Yeah?
She really meant that much to you?
Brody, I'd give it all up. All of it. For just one more day with her. Take care. Hi.
Hey,
you know, I think he bought it.
Yeah? What kind of story did you give him?
Oh, it was the Vulture soliloquy, you know, from the Spider-Man anniversary issue, Love, Be a Vulture Tonight.
Yeah, well, I can't thank you enough, man.
Oh, forget it. But, you know, I think you ought to get him some help. He seems to be really hung up on superhero sex organs. But you'll outgrow it. Okay.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Good evening, folks. Christmas time. Folks, welcome to another edition of our Grindhouse double feature show, or I should say shows. This is the Comic Shop at 6 p.m., and of course, Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk at 7 p.m. Before we get into the comic book pulp-flavored, pop-flavored discourse, we've got to give you some nerdcore. Believe it or not, folks, there are genres and subgenres of hip-hop music that are unbeknownst to the general public, and this is nerdcore. Check this out. This is MC Plus, Man versus Machine. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove. Let's get ready to rumble!
MC++, what are your statistics?
Go ahead, beat this into your heuristics. 1337, that's my vintage. 100%, that's my win percentage. Yo, Flo, you made a critical mistake. Turn on your mask, now you meet your fate. It's too late to undo, too late to go back. You got MC++ with this lyrical attack. My rap soul. Overflow your stack, make your process overheat. By the end of this track, you'll lack space and cash. Start cash, make me want to laugh while your bits are flipping. Check your page table, but it's not able to find free frames going to the wrong label. All the while, I'll corrupt your file with this vicious flow and impeccable style. You can't compute, so you can't compete. So I'll defeat ya, it's nice to meet ya. You should know better than trying to school the teacher. Using very large words like titanium. Fours like titanium.
To bash you in the cranium.
Two for one, it's double data rate. Rising edge, falling edge.
Yo, I cover every state. See, your rhymes are predictable. No terrain test is applicable. Every creation takes on the creator.
Now I am the master.
Like Darth Vader, this is Max Flow taking on organic. Persian, Caucasian, Black or Hispanic. I rip fresh lines that into panic and take MCs apart like a rapper mechanic.
you with lyrics you need to respect. Catching all exceptions that you couldn't expect to be thrown. Please let it be known, MC++ has easily been overthrown. It's clear that Maxflow sits upon the throne. I can battle you alone, but it's well known that I have the capacity to clone my core. Corporate processes then you can endorse. In addition to launching my multiple modules, we have many defenses that exceed lymphatic nodules.
All right. Okay. Enough of that, folks. Giving you the best of nerdcore music. That's MC Plus, Man versus Machine. Man versus Machine. Of course, I could not do the show without my Starship crew, my own Starship crew. Unfortunately,
space, the final frontier.
Captain Kirk has a stomach virus, so he's persona non grata, but he will be missed. We will still go forward, but I do have my engineer, the chief engineer, is in the house, the indefatigable, irreplaceable, irascible, disagreeable, disagreeable. You better believe he's Daryl B. Hold on. Daryl.
Hey, yo, I think the engines could take a little bit more. We'll push this up to 120. And for all the folks last week who were wondering our Star Trek discussion about who the character might be, Spinoff Online has brought up, has an article on it where they bring up 6 to 8 different old-time characters who John Harrison could be. And our picks are all in there, including my Apollo pick, believe it or not, in the comments section. So that's all there. And I was just joking about that. So obviously they're listening to the show because they went deeper than we did.
Well, you know what, Dal? What about Cumberbatch, though? Benedict Cumberbatch, isn't he the man of the moment? I thought there's talk about him playing Gary Mitchell from the original Star Trek series.
Well, like I said, Gary Mitchell's one of the choices there, but they came up with a lot of choices, including the Mirror Universe Picard from the novels. You know, I would love to see how that works.
You know,
it's like totally confusing the audience.
Well, we first of all, we have a caller. Caller, hold on for one moment. We'll get to you in 1 second. Hold on. So when you're talking about the Mirror, okay, listen, the infamous Mirror Universe. Matter of fact, the Mirror Universe is referenced in our outro. When I play the acid jazz cut when we leave, Spock with a beard. Spock with a beard is in reference to that Mirror episode, isn't it?
Yeah, and if you think about it, it created the trope that in your Mirror Universe, all the bad guys would be wearing beards, you know, all the girls are dressed sluttier, you know. All of that, all the tropes from Mirror Universes, hi, French, all the tropes from Mirror Universes, you know, you could look at Star Trek and say, hey, I know where we got our start with that.
Well, you know, it's
episode.
Funny that, listen, it's funny that they still had to have Spock for that Mirror Universe, didn't they?
Yeah.
They still had to have him there. He's a different character. I mean, I never thought about that, but even in that science fiction vehicle, He has his mirror moment too. But when you talk about Picard, I thought I did hear, is it possible that Picard might make an appearance just as Spock made an appearance in the first Star Trek reboot? Are we to expect Picard to be in this one?
Well, that's what I tell people, and they always misunderstand or what I'm saying, or don't get what I'm saying, all right? The fact the first one was so good, you now open yourself to a whole infinite number of ideas that you could throw into the second one. You know, think about it. All these universes, Star Trek, Star Wars, Babylon 5, Battlestar Galactica, the Marvel Comics universe, the DC Comics universe. It isn't just one set idea that you could go with. You have an infinite number of directions to take stories. Just as long as, and I'm referencing Captain Kirk here, just as long as the stories are quality, the writing's quality, the direction is quality, people don't have to know all the nuts and bolts to this. You just go to be entertained. And if you're entertained, then the thing has done its job.
I find that incredible, what you're saying. And again, we're talking about Patrick Stewart. You have to give him respect. We already are accepting that Patrick Stewart will probably be in the next installment of the X-Men, but now you're saying that, and I've been hearing this too, that he might make an appearance in some way. But aren't we talking about different time periods also?
Yeah.
Picard did not exist in the same time frame as Tiberius Kirk.
No, but here's the thing, and this is something that was brought up in the comment section, and I had to think about it for a second. You know what? It may make sense. Who's to say that time runs in the mirror universe at the same rate as here? Who's to say crossing over, you don't miss the era you intend to get to by, 70 years, which would have to be, you know? Hey, anything's possible. It's sci-fi. That's why we love the medium. And just throwing that out as a possibility, my mind went back to all of the Peter David Star Trek novels and remembering all of that, and I'm like, all of these stories are right here. So we don't have to be pegged into one set story. And J.J. Abrams essentially knocked the chessboard off the table. All the pieces are scattered. How you place them back on the board with the first movie, how you place them back up on the board is entirely up to him. He essentially has got a universe full of ideas that he can use. All it has to be is, there's that word again, quality.
All right, listen, obviously we're going to be all over the map this evening. We definitely have to talk about the Man of Steel second trailer, the more full-length trailer, and the Easter eggs that were in that. And then comes along Pacific Rim, the Guillermo del Toro vehicle that's coming out. We have to talk about that. Now, let's answer the caller. Let's see what this person has to add to the conversation. Okay, caller, welcome to the Comic Shop. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. 219, what's up?
Hey, guys, it's Chad. Looking very happy to be with you guys tonight.
How you doing, Chad?
Man. Always welcome. I'm going to have you just sit on in. You're family now, so let's get into it. Let's be all nerdy and geeky together.
Cool.
Let's do this.
You know, I want to chime in on something that you guys just said, and I couldn't agree more. Quality will bring an audience, and I think quality is something that Hollywood has lacked for about the last 20 years, and all they've been able to do is rehash and recycle and renew, and it's always sucked. So if they can do the quality and they can still stay, you know, true to kind of the fan base, I think that there literally is nowhere that they can't go with keeping, keeping a lot of the characters and storylines that we grew up with keeping them alive and fresh for newer generations.
You make an important point there. I hope that Hollywood, you know, somehow turn things around. I mean, you know, we always talk about these commercial properties as if they're not really property. I mean, intellectual property is property of the mind, property of imagination. But they really are property. And, just as your house doesn't really go anywhere, you know, someone will put an awning on top of it. They'll put a dormer on top of it. They'll keep on building and building. But the general property remains. That's what's going to happen with a lot of these intellectual properties. Batman is going to be around for another two or three centuries and beyond, realistically. There's going to be some new take on him. So hopefully with what Daryl just talked about with this Star Trek thing, my mind is blown because, if we've already accepted that J.J. Abrams' Star Trek is a kind of a side timeline thing. It's a side timeline thing where two spots exist at the same time theoretically. So now It opens up a whole can of worms, really. And I never even, we may have to do a show on this because it's too lengthy to talk about. But what happens to the new Trekkie? Like, are the Trekkies that existed, you know, that are into the original episodes, that are into the Next Generation? Well, who are the Trekkies for J.J. Abrams? Are they a new set of Trekkies? Are they the same Trekkies?
Well,
Daryl, go to that real quick. What do you have? Because you know, this is a different Star Trek.
Hey, it is. But that's just it. Trekkies, more than any other fan base, Trekkies are used to seeing the unusual. You know, they're used to looking at ideas in a different way. All right? You know, you make changes to Star Wars, people flip. You make changes to Lord of the Rings, people flip. Trekkies, we're able to roll with the punches on the changes. We're just like, all right, it's going to be a wait-and-see thing. Because you remember, when Deep Space Nine was announced, how many Trekkies got, it's going to be a space station? We can't have any good space stories just in one location. And eventually it won them over. You know, it's that sort of thing. And it's the type of thing that gets me mad when, just switching genres here, when you have all these rumors about JLA, we're going to get to them later, when you have the rumors about Ben Affleck, and you can't have Ben Affleck, no, you can't do that, and then he comes out with Argo, and that's the type of action / comedy / adventure type thing you want from a JLA movie. It's just they don't have tights in Argo, you know? And, Jason Gordon-Levitt, no, we can't have him as Batman or Nightwing in the JLA movie. What are they doing? You guys are closing off a road of ideas before it even gets off the ground because you guys are just ignorant, you know? And that's one thing I can say as a Trekkie, I've learned not to be. You know, when it comes to this, where, okay, that's your idea. I hope it's quality. I'm going to go see it. Wow me.
Listen, I have a confession to make. I was looking at, I mentioned this gentleman before on YouTube. He has his own brand of shouting out Black Nerd Comedy. Black Nerd Comedy. He's a very funny guy. It's good to see Black Nerds, high-profile Black Nerds doing their thing. Shout out to W. Kamau Bell. We are coming, folks. The Black Nerd, Black Intelligentsia, we are coming. So anyway, I'm looking at one of his shows on YouTube, and it's a show, as you can appreciate, Daryl, it's a topic about I'm getting feedback. Is somebody, turn down your volume, who's ever in the background, turn down your volume because I'm getting feedback. If you can't listen to the show and talk at the same time, whoever that is. Maybe it might be Chad, might be Daryl, I don't know. All right. Anyway, the topic was who is nerdier than the next person? Like how you have topics of someone being blacker than someone else, which I'm very familiar with. Are you black enough? Are you black enough? Well, there was, are you nerdy enough? That was his topic. Are you nerdy enough? And he was talking about the thing of you meet someone who has a geeky or nerdy bent, but then you ask him, or you grill him on his nerd knowledge. And let's say he says, well, I love Star Trek, but I'm not really into Doctor Who. I don't know about Doctor Who. You don't know about Doctor Who? Well, you're not really a real nerd. And
oh God,
he was going on and on about these things. Right? I said, I couldn't agree anymore. There's some things that, you know, you don't know everything nerdy. But there are, like, nerd credentials, allegedly, that if you don't fulfill them, someone will call you up on them. So the minute that I saw this video, I said, yeah, this guy, he's got it right, blah, 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 blah. So I'm reading the comments, and then somebody says, I don't really know that much about the original Star Trek series. I don't really like the original. I said, what? You don't like the original?
Acted the exact way. Yeah, there it goes.
Like, I agree with what he said until something hit me. Like, when somebody said, I never saw the original series. What? I went to that instant nerd authenticity mode. So there is something there with that. I have to admit, I got caught up in my own thing.
It's like a combination of our last two shows. Because remember, we talked about the fake geek girl syndrome 2 weeks ago. And last week, we were talking about, like, the inclusion. When talking about, yeah, we got to try to include everybody. And it's something, hey, you guys know, I struggle with it. Because I'll be cool with the mainstream just long enough, but when the mainstream is the dudes and gals that are making decisions on my properties going onto the screen, and they're like, no, we'll throw this into the movie. It'll be cool. We'll throw this into the movie, and I'll be like, don't Spider-Man 3 my movie, man. Don't Dark Knight Rises my movie, man. Don't do all of these plots in my movie, man. Don't ruin this for the true geek, please. For the love of God, no. You know, or I should rather say X-Men 3, my movie. You know, don't throw in all of this. No. It was going good. Why you have to spoil the formula? No. You know, like I'll lose it. But what it is it has to be tolerance and acceptance. Tolerance and acceptance. You like it. You think it's cool? That's good for you. You want recommendations as to where to pick up? I'll give you recommendations to give you baby steps as you get into it. Because what we want to do here, we want to foster interest. We'll get into nerd-centric debates like we're about to, but we want to foster interest in the art form, in the thing. That's part of the reason I did the sci-fi analyst for the blog this week, because they did a good job of just baby steps leading you through the road of the channel, and they're showing you everything they're doing, and they're trying to appeal to everybody. That's what I got to learn to do. There is. I'm right, admitting a failing.
Well, one quick thing. I see that you're on your meds today, because last week you were talking a little differently. You weren't too open to people. You weren't too open to people. I was the one telling you, listen, we have to accept that people are going to come in into our hobby where they come in. They're going to come in at issue 50. They're going to come in at issue 150. They're not going to come in everyone's not coming in at issue 1 or issue 0 nowadays. We have hot women now, Daryl, that are going to comic conventions. Now that they're there, we are upset. But when they weren't there, we were upset also.
I'll just say this. After the past couple of days, and shout out and condolences to the people up in Newtown, you know, that was horrible.
Yeah,
after the past couple of days, a lot of the stuff I took serious, I look as trivial now. And you know what? I'm going to have more fun with this. Sure, I'll rant from time to time, but I'm not going to lose my head, because that was 27 dreams that got snuffed out. 27 future leaders, 27 future artisans, 27 future writers, 27 future a lot of hopes and dreams got snuffed out there. And you know what? If I could help for an hour to make people forget about that and just get mad at me because I'm being totally geeky or I'm being totally evil, you know what? Bring it on. But there's a lot more important things. Just bear with us for this hour and have fun with us, folks. That's it.
Agreed. I couldn't have said it any better than that. Let me just give a shout out to Tricknology, friend of the show. He says, please speak on After Earth with the Smith family, if you could. Okay, we'll talk about that in a moment. Let's really get into the meat, into the gristle. Let's talk about Man of Steel. Now, we saw the first mini trailer a few months ago, and actually, you know, you saw him with the afterburner, and he was moving upward, and we saw a little glimpse of the Man of Steel, the Henry Cavill British version of the Man of Steel, which will probably be good. So anyway, now we're seeing a more lengthy idea of what's going to happen. It's a 2-minute clip, so you see a lot of the major players in this thing. We even see a glimpse of Lawrence Fishburne as Perry White. So hey, listen, I'm glad to see they went there with that. You know, they will do that. But anyway, I like what I saw. The captain was a little harder on it. You know, he's very hard to please. He had some solid points on this. He thought that, you know, there's a little bit of a retread on this thing, a little Smallville thing going on. I thought, see, actually, it angered me even more because
they really grounded the Man of Steel from what I saw. They grounded Superman. So much to the point where...
Yeah, you have to use the word grounded, huh? Bringing up the JMS freaking bad memories here, but go ahead.
Listen. He's grounded enough where there could be a Christian Bale in the background. He definitely could fit into this universe. There's no camp here now. You saw who's playing his mother? Who's playing his mother?
Sally Field?
Didn't she play?
She played Aunt May.
Okay.
Susan Sarandon?
I don't think so.
Now I have to look this up. Gosh darn it.
All right, well, anyway, you see him as a child, and he's in a closet, and you see that she's trying to work him through his abilities, the fact that he's probably listening to the entire world now. Literally, his super hearing could probably drive him mad. And you start to appreciate why this character was raised on a farm. And it was almost a godsend for this particular couple to raise a god.
Hey, guys, it was Diane Lane.
Yes.
Diane Lane.
Was Diane Lane?
Yeah,
oh,
Diane Lane.
Mom this time. All right.
Yeah, well, Diane Lane is hot.
All right, he went a different direction. So there's things going on where you see a lot more emotionalism going on. The only thing I have a problem with is some of the points that the captain talked about. We're going into Zod again. You know, Zod, we saw him. You know, it's like, okay, it's 30 years since the last film. I just have a problem. We need to go. We should have gone with Brainiac, something completely different than Zod or Luthor. Or even if Luthor's there, he should be this. I mentioned this before. He should be the corporate raider pulling the strings behind the scenes. Let him be an equivalent to Superman in the sense that he controls Metropolis, and on a legal level, Superman cannot touch him. He cannot touch him. Sure, Superman is more physically powerful, but as far as obeying the laws, if Superman is going to obey the laws, he has to kowtow to Luthor. They should have had that there, not some stupid scientist, some shenanigans. No. What are your thoughts, Daryl, on the Man of Steel, the second trailer?
Again, I'm going to go with, okay, this is the direction you want to go. Because after all, everybody knows, my theory was, for this movie, I didn't want it to take place on Earth. I wanted it to take place in space. I wanted, you know, Mongol, War World, make Superman super. Get him away from Earth. Earth is what's holding him back right now. All right? You could have a menace coming to Earth, and you'll see, the problem is, with every Superman movie, you try to make him human. You do. He needs a menace that makes him super. You know, he needs a menace where a lot of people say, we're out of touch with Superman in this day and age. You got to show why he's super. Take him away from Earth. Put him in space. You know, that way you don't have to worry about the continuity that's been established on Earth. Have them fight some awesome outer space menace. But we're going to do it on Earth, and now you want to do it grim and gritty, you want to do it grounded, you want to do it, that's fine. I don't need Super Stalker. I don't need Super Messiah. The dude's name is Superman. Play to that.
Chad, what are your thoughts on this?
That's the problem.
Chad, did you check out this trailer? What are your thoughts on
it? Yeah, yeah. And I'm a huge Superman fan. And I'm disappointed by the trailer. From a standpoint, does it look great? Yeah. But much like Daryl just said, I'm tired of everybody trying to always find their way to squeeze him into – you know, the Smallville football uniform, and then the stumbling reporter, and the alien trying to be human who can't figure out. You know, since The Dark Knight, which I thought was a great movie, and Batman Begins I thought was great, but Batman's a human character who does daring feats. It seems like now we're trying to take all these superheroes and in humanizing them, we think that means to make them into soap operas. I don't want to know about Superman and the constant back and forth with Lois Lane. Do they love each other? They don't. Does he tell her? I mean, lay it out, establish it, and then I agree. Blast his happy ass out in the space. Let him fight something to prove why he is this, why he is Superman. And there's a, you know, the John Byrne run when he reignited Superman.
Or
if you look at some of the early, when you look at some of the early Batman Superman comic books that just recently came out, you know, there's a line that Batman says, and I thought it was a great line. He's trapped by some villains, and Superman tells him to move to the left 3 feet, and he's up almost like in space, and he zaps the villains from space, and Batman says, just when I think Clark is the most human of all of us, he zaps somebody from space like he's a god. And I think that that's something that they never really touch on with Superman, and nobody's figured out how to make him amazing and spectacular, and I realize I'm talking about Spider-Man, how to make him extraordinary and larger than life and fantastic, but still have a human element. But it doesn't have to be so heavy-handed with the farm boy and, you know, the lost alien. He can just be Superman, and I think they need to try that.
Well, you make some solid – go ahead, Doug, go ahead.
You know what I refer to? The last episode of JLU where he's fighting Darkseid.
Yes, that's a great episode.
And he says, you know what? Every day, I got to live in control of my powers. I'm afraid of hurting everybody around me if I lose control. But you can take it, big boy. You know, something like that.
Yeah, I think that bringing Darkseid to me, I know that I was reading, I think, on IGN, they said, you know, to have brought in Darkseid would have been too much like Marvel bringing in Thanos. Bring in Darkseid. I'm sick of Lex Luthor. I'm sick of Zod. Superman has one of the largest galleries of villains to date, maybe because he's been around for so long. But you could have touched on Brainiac. You could have touched on other entities in the Phantom Zone besides Zod. You could have gone on and on. But they, you know, like I said before, Hollywood's out of ideas. And all I can do is rehash, renew, and recycle. And they're struggling.
All right, you know what? Gentlemen, let's take a quick musical break. I want to get back to this. I think we're going to segue. We're still going to talk about this Man of Steel trailer, but we might as well segue this into the JLA conversation as well, because it's mixed up in the same bag. And I do think, I might have mentioned this before, I do think there's a saving grace for the Man of Steel. I mean, listen, this is the trailer. It could be a hell of a lot different than what we think it is. They're going to have to hit a home run with this, because after the 2006 debacle, there's nowhere else for these folks to go at Warner Brothers. So they're gambling a lot on this. We'll see. I too, am uncomfortable with them going back into the same villain trope. So, like you said, they could have done this a whole lot of different ways. All right, let's go into another nerdcore jam for a few moments, gentlemen. This is Bad Spella. Bad Spella with MC Frontalot, Rhyme of the Nibelung. I think that's what's pronounced. Rhyme of the Nibelung. We'll be back in a few moments, folks. Let's groove. Bad Spella.
Decided to go see the ring, I thought it was probably a musical about hobbits. Started out promising, fleeing enough, little fella running around, there were trees and stuff, and the shelter from the storm, then a girl it seems. So the dialogue don't make no sense to me, and the hubby come out, he look a little menacing, says he gonna eat you like a little piece of venison. When it's the morning, I guess I'm confused, does the wife know the hero, there seems to be clues. There's a sword in the tree, why the tree in the house? Did she sip a man to Mickey, how come Sicky don't get out? How come neither of them make it for the hills right now? As for brothers, up and sisters, isn't this disallowed? Isn't this kind of how bad fates come about? I'm gonna need an intermission just to figure it out. Now here come Papa, he's the one-eyed jack. Brunhilde is the daughter with the armor on her back. Does he lack indiscretion? He backs up quick. Daddy Bodo never seemed a step to mock Rick. She got him by the thick of the beard, she's insistent. But the subtitle's thicker than I missed it. Odin don't get his son killing dragons. Still sounds like a job for the elder Baggins. Ain't even alright to get his daughter to fix fights. I'm about to go to sleep in my seat. Alright, cause the music's hella stupid, it don't got no beats. And that's the 22nd time I heard the leitmotif. And I cite no grief, but I ain't for me, so
for the kind of people, yo, who listen to the CBC and sip on tea and read up on the paper. Another intermission coming, I'ma be the greatest caper. Sneaking out the lobby, got ushed by an usher. Showed me to my role and reminded me to hush up. I settled in, waiting for the boredom to commence. Definitely unprepared for what come next. When the strings set in and the horns come chasing, it's kinda like I got rewarded for my patience. This is more like it, this I could keep. Ladies in helmets, you ride 18. Moving down in my seat, I'm rocking and squirming. Even almost got over the fact that they're talking German. I'm learning, might even have to come back. Wonder if they sell a ticket for just the third act. That's on the way out, did I follow? I say sort of, and I got to say I'm glad that we're in the rings if there's a Lord of. I saw a lot of similarities, but I'm pretty sure that this was an adaptation of Star Wars. I mean, you know, the twins and everything. I'll probably go look it up on the internet, you know, just to be sure.
All right, folks, we're back once again. Welcome to the Comic Shop. That was Bad Spella. Bad Spella with MC Frontalot. I'm telling you, folks, there's a lot more hip-hop out here than you're getting. I mean, this is – I mean, it's amazing that they're able to rap about, quote-unquote, nerdy things so effectively. I thought that was a pretty smart jam. Again, Bad Spella featuring MC Frontalot. Doesn't get any better, folks. The best of nerdcore here. Of course, you're going to hear Urban Alternative on the next show, the next hour, Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Let's get back into the fray. We're talking about the Man of Steel trailer. And inevitably, if you're going to talk about Man of Steel, you're going to have to talk about the Justice League. And this movie is highly anticipated, so we're hearing more talk about that. Let me bring Daryl back into this. I see Daryl dropped off for a moment. Everybody's
sorry about that, guys.
That's all right. So, you know, we were talking about whether Clark Kent can be humanized, whether he's the ultimate alien. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on with the character. The character's a difficult one. This is why I collect both DC and Marvel, a whole bunch of other comic book companies, but it's a problem with the way DC created their characters. Marvel was just, they created excellent psychological dramas. And DC is doing their homework and trying to backtrack on what Marvel has done so effectively. And it is funny, it's going to be very weird, I guess, that we have Thanos coming up for the second installment of the Avengers. And now there's talk that Darkseid will probably be the main villain for the Justice League. So, you know, I don't know how they're going to make this Man of Steel movie some kind of singular effort. Because first of all, that's another thing, too. We've seen so many singular stories without any connective tissue when it comes to Superman. That if they're going to make this unique, if they're going to make it interesting and unique from all the other Superman movies and Smallville and all that stuff, they're going to have to give us something. They're going to have to give us a tidbit of other superpowered beings, other vigilantes in the universe. I said this during the Afternoon show on Wednesday, because we talked about the Man of Steel there too. I said, and Daryl could probably appreciate this, all they have to do, it doesn't really cost anything. All they have to do is show stock footage of the Batmobile being chased down by by Gotham PD. Clark Kent's in his apartment looking at this, and you hear the announcer saying, who is this nut, this vigilante nut in Gotham causing wreck? The audience would go crazy. Stock footage from Batman Begins. That's it. I don't know why. So, you know, whoever Batman is, they should just roll up the Brinks truck to Christian Bale. Christian Bale has already gotten an Oscar. I don't think he has to worry about being typecast at this point. But I guess he wants to, you know, he doesn't want to do it anymore, I guess. But why have the ending that Dark Knight Rises had? The ending left it open, didn't it? John?
Yeah. And you see, but that it goes back to something Chad said. There's no originality here. They're not thinking outside the box. All this isn't about, okay, we're going to use Superman to start up our thing. This is all, okay, Marvel got success doing this, so we're going to do this, and we're going to take Marvel's idea, but we're not going to make it the Marvel way. We're going to do it this way. And I'm like, you got a whole universe full of ideas. could we be original? Could we think outside the box for a second? And in that way, yo, Chad hits the point on the head 100%. We said it before. It'd be nothing in all of these movies to plant the seeds of a bigger universe. But these nuts all figure, well, there's no other heroes in this universe. We're on our own. We don't want to link up anything. We don't want to do this. We don't want to do that. But then now that Avengers and that formula works so well, you hear the suits. Well, why can't we have a movie like this? And that's what drives us nuts. Go ahead, Chad.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, as much as I think it helped DC get some longevity, I think it really hurt DC in the long run, is the damn CW. Because the CW, you know, if you guys have ever seen Arrow, I think Arrow is actually a really, I'll put it this way, it's got a lot of good stuff going for it. But when I watch Arrow, I'll DVR it, and I fast-forward past all the romance and the family issues, and then I go right to when he's the Arrow doing Green Arrow stuff. And the CW has some great, you know, action or fantasy shows, Supernatural and then they had Smallville, but they buried it with so much soap opera that just because fans turned to it, I think DC goes, well, that's what we got to keep doing just on a bigger scale. Let's make a two-hour soap opera where you just happen to have a character who has superpowers. And I think that's why Superman Returns turned out to be the big old giant nightmare of boredom that it was. Everybody thought, well, let's do a nice 2.5 hours of Smallville where he's just like a creepy stalker, deadbeat dad. And the people that turned out to the theaters were the fans, not the TV fans. And the comic book fans were horribly disappointed, and I'm thinking DC is going to make the same mistake.
Well, you know, I don't know how to call this because, see, what's going to happen is, first of all, we have to admit something. And I knew this when I was started collecting comics when I was 12. At 12, when I read these books, I noticed that they always had the cliffhanger. It was the male equivalent of a soap opera. Comic books are soap operas. They are. And I said to myself years ago, if girls only knew what these comic books were really about, they would love them because they're so much like the soap opera. Lo and behold, that day has come. So now these movies have piqued the curiosity of women. You have such a thing as female geeks. 20 years ago, you really didn't have that. Now you know, they're actually marketing for female. There's a market for female geeks. The whole Hunger Games phenomenon and Twilight, those are geared towards female geeks now. They're going to these conventions in full attendance and full garb. The whole cosplay thing. It's, you know, it's very, you know, we some of these things, Hollywood, you know how, you listen, these are definitely cultural products. We know what they are, but at the end of the day, the suits are going to come in. And they're going to figure out, okay, we gotta have something for the geeks, but we gotta have something for the girls. If there's always gonna be product placement. When you saw The Matrix years ago, it wasn't by accident that every car that was in the Matrix film was a Cadillac. I mean, Hollywood is going to, it's a business. They're going to figure out a way to do certain things that might tick you off because it might appeal to somebody else. The person sitting next to you. That's the
hell,
way it is.
Hell, I'm still waiting for the Larry Fishburne glasses, the Morpheus glasses to be sold. No one sells them joints without the sides and the. I thought that was the product placement, but that was the first place we ever. But that was the first place we ever saw Bluetooth before it came out on the market. So you know, hey.
I thought those things would have gave you a hell of a sinus headache. It just
hey.
Looked like that would have caused so much pain.
Just squeeze it right there, you know.
Yep.
I don't have to worry about it getting caught on my earphones.
Listen, let's turn this around a bit. There's always time to talk about the Man of Steel. Let's go to Guillermo del Toro's latest effort, Pacific Rim. We finally got around to seeing the trailer. What do you think, Daryl? I mean, you know, it's I love Guillermo del Toro's work. in my eyes, he really can do no wrong. But I don't know about this. It has a feeling of Terminator. Not, I'm sorry, Transformers all over it. I'm not sure what to think.
You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of you brought up Transformers meets the War That Time Forgot from DC Comics meets Monster Island from Marvel. That's what this reminded me of. It's creepy.
Bing Bang
it's
Boom.
It's creepy.
Yeah, Bing Bang Boom.
Yeah, it's creepy. It's kooky. It's strange. I gotta admit, it piqued my interest a little bit until I saw the Transformers type animation. I was like, you know what? I trust Del Toro. It's a trailer. I'm gonna go see it. But I won't lie, I'm right with you there. I was like, I was geeked up for the first part of the trailer, and then, what the hell is that? Why is Battleship in my movie? What the?
I was about to say that. I mean, you know, Transformers became so tropey that if anyone does a giant robot movie, it's always going to be some kind of connection to Transformers. Now, we're told that the fourth Transformers coming out with Mark Wahlberg is going to be a different Transformers. So we'll see what happens. But
you know, but Michael Bay's so attached to it.
Yeah, Michael Bay's attached to it. The first Transformers, yes. So Chad, yeah, let's stock up on Ant Acids now.
You know, I thought Pacific Rim was interesting. I agree with you guys. I'm a big Del Toro fan. My only concern is I like Del Toro when he's doing Del Toro stuff. When he's doing the creepy and the weird and the Pan's Labyrinth and the Hellboy and the Devil's Backbone, he's like a master. I don't know if his what he's good at is going to also include giant robots. I thought about Robot Jocks, if you guys remember that movie from like the early 90s. I was like, oh, hell, Robot Jocks is back. But I don't know. I'll be seeing it right next to you guys, so I guess we'll see.
Well, you know what's so funny, Chad, is, you know, it's funny, everyone's getting in on the geek thing now. Now, Wall Street Journal has their own, they have their own video presence on YouTube, the Wall Street Journal channel, and they have their own, quote-unquote, nerd expert who weighed in on the Man of Steel. It's like what we're doing, the Man of Steel as well as the Pacific Rim. And even he had said that he's nervous because this is Del Toro trying to do a cover version of a Michael Bay film.
Oh, dear God.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah.
That's a good explanation.
Yeah.
And I don't like, I mean, Michael Bay disturbs me.
Well, I look at it this way. Del Toro is a great mimic because he's done horror stuff. He's out Tim Burton. But when you out Michael Bay, does that mean bigger explosions? Does that mean more paper-thin female portrayals? Does that mean dialogue and physics that just don't make sense even in a movie universe? You know,
Bad Boys 3.
Bad Boys. the Bad Boys in Space. Bad Boys.
Yes, that's
space.
Right. Or they're fighting zombies this time. One of the two.
Yeah, you know, there's just so many ways we can look at this. I'm just trusting Del Toro. That's what I'm playing it. Just like last week, you were saying, I have complete faith in Zack Snyder. Well, this is my week. Del Toro, he's going to make this into an okay film. It's just, will the familiar special effects overshadow the work he does? That's a big question.
All right, you know what? Let's do as a favor Trignology. He talked about After Earth, and I've been glancing at this film. It's not yet out yet. It's not yet out. It's a Will Smith, Jaden Smith affair. Listen, I appreciate this, that there's such a thing as black science fiction in a way. But the only thing of it is that it seems like Will Smith is the only go-to guy for this. And well, maybe Idris Elba to a certain degree. Now, we're seeing him in more science fiction, sci-fi thing. But as far as someone actually helming a high-profile science fiction effort, it seems like Will Smith is the guy. Like, he is the guy. And I wish there were more – I wish there was, like, an actual science – a black science fiction cornerstone somewhere. I mean, there is, but there isn't. You know, with Tyler Perry is kind of – he's kind of – you know, that's he's everybody, unfortunately.
I have to give Tyler credit. The Alex Cross film was not bad. He wasn't bad in it. It makes me think if he gets away from the Madea thing and does a couple more picks like that, he'll build up his rep.
Now, you're going to get me in trouble with one of our listeners who I met last night. Friend of the show, Sergio Mims from Chi-Town, came in to Manhattan yesterday, and we met with friends. I met him, and we're talking about what you just said. And he's not a fan of Tyler Perry, and he said he thought that him branching out into Alex Cross was not believable, that the box office receipts indicate that the public would prefer to see him in a dress.
Yeah,
that also
says a lot about the public too, and that Madea fan base. You know, I'm not saying you guys got anything in your closet, wink, 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 but. He was not bad. I'll tell you the truth. He wasn't bad. He was comparable to the Morgan Freeman Alex Cross joint that went a couple of years ago. It was very comparable to that. Was he better? No. But I'm just saying, if he got away from the childish stuff, like the Madea thing, and he focused on this and being a little bit more serious, he could grow as an actor. But the problem is that stigma is going to stick with him. If you
let's forget about Tyler Perry. Enough of him. There's enough talk about him. This After Earth thing. Originally, it was called 1000 AE. So now it's called just After Earth. Jaden Smith, now he's a teenager now, so he's getting older. From what I'm understanding, it's obviously a futuristic storyline, father and son connecting on an abandoned planet. I guess an abandoned Earth. So we're hearing other folks of color involved in this thing. It's a multiracial cast. Lenny Kravitz's daughter, Cutie Pie, Zoe Kravitz, she's in a full effect. Sophie Okonedo is there. Isabel Furman. There's a few people that are coming in. Undoubtedly, you know, Will Smith knows how to really lay it down when it comes to the box office. I hope it does well. I guess my only complaint is, you know, and this again, we have to remember this is something else. It's kind of funny. M. Night is the director on this thing. He needs a hit. He needs a hit. So if him working with Will Smith does not bring it home, he might as well just wrap it up then.
Oh God! No, that's it, Apple. Don't hold back. Tell us how you feel.
I love that cast because it sounds like in the future only black people survive the catastrophe.
Well, listen, that's a first, isn't it?
I know. You know, it's funny. Real quick, you guys mentioned that when I was a kid, I used to watch the Flintstones and the Jetsons, both made by Hanna-Barbera. And there were no black people in either. I thought we rise up after dinosaurs, but as soon as you see a flying car and a talking dog, we're going to die.
No, you know, the end of the world happens. You know, T'Challa has got plans for all this. Wakanda would still be here. And everybody would be trying to get into Wakanda. And I was like, no, can't let you in, Whitey. Sorry,
you know,
can't let you
no,
in.
Well, you know, it's funny he mentioned Flintstones and the Jetsons, because I do fondness for Hanna-Barbera cartoons. And I have the DVD of A Man Called Flintstone, which I just can't get enough of that. Judo, chop, chop. You know, I can't get enough. I actually have that somewhere on our board, the judo, chop, chop thing. But I love that whole spy thing. So I look at it on occasion over and over again. I like the Flintstones. And I love the Jetsons, but you're right. I think in later iterations of Flintstones, I think they did have black cavemen of color. Did they? Well, Halle Berry was in the
the live action version of it.
Yeah,
I think we got Joe Rockhead.
Yeah.
I think Joe Rockhead was maybe trying to pass. That's all I'll say about it.
Now you made me think of this. Now that there's going to be a revived version of the Flintstones, that what's his face from Ted and from
Seth MacFarlane.
Seth MacFarlane. I hope he has the insight. Well, you know, he has the Cleveland Show, so maybe for political correctness, do I have some? I mean, you know, we just weren't included in that kind of stuff.
Well,
now they kind of have to.
Well, it touches on the biggest subject. It was After Earth and all everything we're discussing. Are black audiences, black mainstream audiences, are they ready to have African American and people of color in major studio roles and sit down and support it? Because you know Will Smith's fan base is going to go out and see this, all right? But the thing is, after this, you got, like you did, a whole diverse section of actors here that we know from a bunch of other stuff. Will we follow them if they decide to do other sci-fi projects that don't include Will Smith? That's the big question. Because, African-American audiences, we support a whole lot of genres, but we've not given the love to sci-fi fantasy when one of us is the leading star.
Well,
you know?
Well, listen, this is what we try to do here at Afro Nerd and the Comic Shop, Daryl. We're looking to do this even bigger than that. You know, trust me on that. There has to be an infrastructure built on our part, even if it's on the internet, an infrastructure where all of there's a collective of, you know, shouting out to Black Science, blacksciencefiction.com, that website, blacksuperhero.com. There are little satellites of black sci-fi and geekiness, but there's got to be an infrastructural umbrella that houses all this stuff. And Will Smith should not be the only person like Atlas holding it up on his shoulders. This is what's happening. I mean, Will Smith, you have a black man, a black son, and this movie and a minority cast, and the movie's going to break. It's going to be a $300, $400, maybe even $500 million movie. That's his average. Even the movies that I think aren't going to do that well with Will Smith brings in $500 million on his films, and he's a black guy. So why is he the only one that's allowed for this genre?
Hey,
and mind you, Idris Elba is helming Pacific Rim, and it's being directed by a Latin gentleman. So I mean, you gotta there's pockets of sanity. So there's pockets of sanity. Can we have the sanity bloom? That's the question, gentlemen. We got less than 2 minutes. I gotta go next door and do another show. Chad, you're welcome all the time. We love you to come on. We need more geeks coming through and talking this stuff. So it should be pretty interesting. Listen, we got to move on up. Daryl, any closing thoughts?
Closing thoughts? Hey, hug your kids. Enjoy your parents. Cherish them. That's it. Yo, keep fantasizing, folks.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this on the next show, actually. Chad, always welcome, man.
Spot for the beard.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
asking me to vouch for you. Well, the funny thing about vouching for someone, James, is that when that someone shows himself to be less than what was promised, every decision you take from that point on is second-guessed. And that, in my line of work, is suicide. And besides, why does a cool, mellow fellow like yourself want to hang around with a bunch of stuffy old white guys?
Same reason you want to hang around those stuffy old white guys. Power. Connection. But let's keep it real. I'm just a cool, mellow fellow. Just shucking and jiving. Crip walking, basketball playing, singing, dancing, and taking out your garbage. That's what I am to you.
You're right. You are African American. And myself and my friends, for the most part, don't care for the company of African Americans. Quite frankly, we're entertained by you. We're thrilled by your high-flying acrobatics on the basketball court. That wonderful sense of rhythm you have. Your animal athleticism. But apart from that, we have no use for you. Understand? I mean, let's face it, James. Do you set a place at your dinner table for your pit bulls? Now, is this keeping it real enough for you?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funk and lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos, mortals label me as a logger.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. Welcome once again for part two. Batting second, this is Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Or should I say just Afro Nerd? Captain Kirk is out because of a stomach virus, so we definitely give him our prayers. Something is going around, so he's out for the count for the moment. He'll be back hopefully for the next show. Anyway, folks, the call in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We have a full show still. I'm doing it for Delph, doing it for Dolo, as they say, sort of. Friend of the show, as well as our official political commentator, political contributor, Norman Kelly, author Norman Kelly. He's coming through momentarily, so he will help me with giving you all that we can as far as information. There's a tragedy afoot, folks. Unfortunately, what happened not too far from where we're broadcasting in Newtown, Connecticut. It's horrible. I can't even... No one can imagine what those parents are dealing with right now with the loss of their children and the loss of their loved ones in a just senseless act of violence. It's going down, folks. Almost per month, we're hearing about these mass shootings, these mass killings. And in referencing the POTUS, in referencing President of the United States, Barack Obama, something has to be done now. The NRA, they're on notice. They've been on notice for a minute. You know what, folks? Let's get to a quick groove before we get into the discourse. We have a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about the tragedy. We're going to give our due.
but I don't want to dwell on it so much because it is a bit painful. It is a bit much, but we will have to address it. All right, going to a quick groove. This is a mashup, a remix of Stevie Wonder's classic Superstition. Check out for this. Let's groove. Stevie Wonder's Superstition, kind of a different style on it, though. We'll be right back, folks. Let's get to it. Once again, giving you the best of urban alternative, Afro-punk, black rock, mashups, everything that conventional radio refuses to play. That was a redux of the Stevie Wonder classic Superstition. I guess that's a drum and bass style version of it. But you are undoubtedly not going to hear it on conventional radio. Once again, folks, welcome to the second half. This is Afro featuring Captain Kirk. But the captain is out. He's out with a stomach virus. And we wish him a speedy recovery. Friend of the show, Sergio Mims, I saw him yesterday in the Village, Greenwich Village, New York. It was great to see him, a stalwart supporter of the show. And the captain was unable to appear then to meet our friend. And he really is sick. So, because he loves the, you know, loves to do the broadcast, as do I. So, again, we welcome, we hope that he has a speedy recovery, folks. Also, let me bring in, I have all these theatrics when I bring in people. Unfortunately, my board is acting a little fuzzy, so I'm just going to bring him on in. He doesn't need really an introduction, but I'm going to give it to him anyway. Friend of the show, political contributor, Norman Kelly. Norman.
Hello.
Welcome once again, sir. We appreciate you coming through. We had supposed to have you earlier, but you know, towards the end of the year, the last quarter, there's so many things going on. Sometimes it's hard to kind of put things in perspective. So we didn't forget about you, trust me. But
I'm glad to see you here now. Hope I can feel the big seat of the captain. No, he's probably got
sure
big shoes, but I'm going to feel the big. Try to feel the big seat.
he's a big dude. He is a big dude, actually. All right, listen, we have a lot to talk about. I guess you have to talk about the obvious, Norman.
This tragedy,
local tragedy with these kids. What were your first thoughts about this thing, and what do you think is going to happen politically? There's a political attachment to this, so I want to hear what do you think is going to happen now.
Well, first let me say, you know, I'm not a parent, you know, but I like children. You know, I wish I had gotten married and had children, but these are one of the few moments I'm glad that I'm not one. So it just, you know, like when you have a society that will not protect its children, now this is one of the reasons why I've raised a Catholic, baptized in the Catholic Church, why I kind of like washed my hands of the Catholic hierarchy because of the whole pedophile thing, which they knew that priests were like preying on children, and the church would not protect the congregate's children. When you have a society that will not protect its children, that sends a signal. Now, I really think it's time that, at the very least, look, we have a Second Amendment, which everybody legitimately has a right to, you know, keep a gun in his or her home. That's not going to go away. However, I don't see any reason why people have the right to have access to assault weapons. And also, I don't understand why people have access to weapons that have large magazines. We are going to have a very serious discussion and debate about this. The president said something about meaningful action. We should hold his feet to the fire on that. This is enough is enough, man. This is just getting to be ridiculous. We're now having it's periodic massacres, and it's just enough is enough. People have to put their foot down. We're not talking about eviscerating the Second Amendment. That's been affirmed by the Supreme Court. Something has to be done. We have to figure out a way to A, check guns, reasonably check guns, close down loopholes in gun selling operations, and also we really should be looking at whatever mental health crises this country is facing, because there's something going on with a certain class of people who are committing these acts, and we're not paying attention to it until it's too late.
Well, you know what? Let's go to a quick clip. This is the president talking about this. A couple of minutes. Let's give him his respect. And it's something else I want to mention as well. I'm a frequent caller of the Rob Redding Show. Rob Redding is a broadcaster on Sirius XM. And actually, I didn't take too well to his take on President Obama coming out the way that he did. He seemed to critique the president with grandstanding on this issue. He thought that maybe the emotionalism, he was fighting back tears, which I thought was very legitimate. It was very appropriate.
Oh, yeah.
Considering how heinous this act was. But what happened was Redding said that, well, you know, he is already setting this up to be some kind of gun control issue. And I said, wait a minute. So too many of these situations have happened where it has self-politicized. There's no way to get around it. The president has been silent on this.
Oh, yeah.
The public, for whatever reason, maybe you can talk about this after the clip. But there's been more people buying guns, stockpiling them during this presidency in record numbers. So for some reason, because we have a black president, everyone has to get a gun. So now that we've gotten all these guns, we're pointing it towards us, pointing them towards ourselves. We're looking for some bogeyman that's not appearing. The bogeyman was the woman's son.
After the clip, I'll refer to something that I picked up on Talking Points and Memo about the mother and the boogeyman.
Oh, there's a lot to talk about her.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a lot to talk about.
So let's go to the clip.
Okay. Let's go to the clip, folks. This is your president and mine talking about this tragedy in Sandy Hook, the Sandy Hook school shooting. Hold on one moment. Let's go to it.
This afternoon, I spoke with Governor Malloy and FBI Director Mueller. I offered Governor Malloy my condolences on behalf of the nation and made it clear he will have every single resource that he needs to investigate this heinous crime, care for the victims, counsel their families. We've endured too many of these tragedies in the past few years, and each time I learn the news, I react not as a president, but as anybody else would, as a parent. And that was especially true today. I know there's not a parent in America who doesn't feel the same overwhelming grief that I do. The majority of those who died today were children. Beautiful little kids between the ages of 5 and 10 years old. They had their entire lives ahead of them. Birthdays, graduations, weddings, kids of their own. Among the fallen were also teachers, men and women who devoted their lives to helping our children fulfill their dreams. So our hearts are broken today for the parents and grandparents, sisters and brothers of these little children, and for the families of the adults who were lost. Our hearts are broken for the parents of the survivors as well. For as blessed as they are to have their children home tonight, they know that their children's innocence has been torn away from them too early, and there are no words that will ease their pain. As a country, we have been through this too many times. Whether it's an elementary school in Newton, or a shopping mall in Oregon, or a temple in Wisconsin, or a movie theater in Aurora, or a street corner in Chicago, these neighborhoods are our neighborhoods, and these children are our children. And we're going to have to come together and take meaningful action to prevent more tragedies like this, regardless of the politics. This evening, Michelle and I will do what I know every parent in America will do, which is hug our children a little tighter, and we'll tell them that we love them, and we'll remind each other how deeply we love one another. But there are families in Connecticut who cannot do that tonight, and they need all of us right now. In the hard days to come, that community needs us to be at our best as Americans, and I will do everything in my power as president to help. Because while nothing can fill the space of a lost child or loved one, all of us can extend a hand to those in need, to remind them that we are there for them, that we are praying for them, that the love they felt for those they lost endures not just in their memories, but also in ours. May God bless the memory of the victims. And in the words of Scripture, heal the brokenhearted and bind up their wounds.
All right, folks, once again, that was President Barack Obama speaking about this grotesque tragedy, this heinous act that occurred at Sandy Hook School in Newtown, Connecticut, which is not too far from where we're broadcasting. It's about probably about an hour at the most. This is the Tri-State area. We have a friend of the show as well as our official political contributor, Norman Kelly, in attendance. Sir, as I said before the clip, Rob Redding from SiriusXM thought that the president was grandstanding, that he was politicizing this thing based on what you just heard. He thought that he was, you know, the tears were somewhat thespian. I don't agree with that whatsoever. What are your thoughts on this?
No, I think, you know, the president was saying something very heartfelt. I mean, this is a tragedy, man. I mean, we have 20 children, what, 5 to 6 to 7, and now it's been reported that some of them, most of them, the children were shot multiple times. So now you're trying to figure what sort of rage was this person in. It wasn't like, boom, you're dead. It's like, boom, boom, to a child. I mean, there's something going on. Now, I just really do not buy what your colleague was saying, that this is like grandstanding. I mean, you know, as you said before the clip, this is a president who, just coming into office, people feel like they have to, like, arm up because something was going to happen. He's going to take their guns. As a matter of fact, it's been reported on Talking Points memo that the aunt of the assailant, Marsha Lanza, was interviewed, and she has spoken to Nancy Lanza, the decedent's mother, who was also killed. She said, quote, "Last time we visit with her in person, we talked about prepping, and, you know, are you ready for what can happen down the line? when the economy collapses, said the gunman's aunt, Marsha Lanza. The reporter asked, survivalist kind of thing? Yes, yeah, said Marsha Lanza. Now, this is what's going on. I mean, now, we're still days away from trying to figure out what's going on, but this may be the tip of the iceberg that the mother herself, and it's been said that the woman was a gun enthusiast. Well, you know, there are lots of guns enthusiasts. You know, nothing wrong with that. But this woman might have been a survivalist, and now she probably had, she may have had more access to weapons or a certain sort of, like, mindset that lent itself to her son, like, taking her life, his life, but before that, the lives of, like, 26 other people. And people ought to be wondering, what the hell is going on in this country?
Well, you know what, Norman? I'm hesitant to go in a certain direction with this, but I have to be true to myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to expand it and unpack this story a little bit. As you just said, the Lanzas are behind this, ultimately. We have Adam Lanza was the actual gunman.
Right.
And Nancy Lanza was his mom, who was the first victim.
Right.
And she was the one, as you just aptly stated, she was the one that had these guns in the house. She was a gun enthusiast. She was going to the range, shooting on a range. She was into guns. That was her thing.
Now, nothing wrong with that. It's perfectly legal.
Now, her son allegedly suffered from Asperger's syndrome, which is a mild form of autism.
Well,
actually it's the quote-unquote good autism,
mm-hmm.
if there's such a thing, where, you know, folks who are highly successful, like the Bill Gateses of the world,
mm-hmm.
allegedly they have a form of Asperger's syndrome where they're socially awkward, but they're brilliant mentally.
Mm-hmm.
But this kid seemed to really be off and awkward. And they said that from the age of 5, the neighbors knew that this kid was not right. So do you take your son to a gun range and bring him up in a gun culture when he's not right?
Well, I mean, we don't – I see, like, the thing is, I've been hearing this stuff about him having Asperger's. It's called ASD, Autism Spectrum Disorder. That, which means it's on a spectrum. Now, from what I've read, nobody really knows this for a fact, because I'd be quite hesitant to accept what's coming down the line about this shooting other than what we already know, because some of the reporting was bad. First, they misidentified the assailant as the assailant's brother. Then they said that Nancy Lanza was a teacher, and she wasn't. So now that I'm hearing this stuff about the boy having ASD, I'm kind of skeptical about accepting that until I get more factual information, until, like, some doctor who actually treated this kid or knew something about him knows that he actually had it. And then you also have to ask, well, what did that actually have to do with the shooting? I mean, are we casting aspersions widely, you know? So we really don't know. I mean, we really don't know.
Well, listen, you said news is still forthcoming,
mm-hmm.
but the setup seems to be there. Now, the problem where I have with this thing, and it's, I'm going to go in a direction that's probably going to be uncomfortable for some folks, but
mm-hmm.
it is what it is. We're dealing with an upper middle class white area.
Yes.
That's afflicted by gun violence, and in this instance, and we're seeing a number of these pocket regions of people exploding. For whatever reason, and they're committing widespread murderous acts. And it seems, you know, I was working out earlier before the broadcast, and I'm looking at the TV screens, and it's a horrific thing. It's a tearjerker, and you're seeing the young fathers, the young parents just outpouring. It is a horror show, ladies and gentlemen. It is
mm-hmm.
a rough road. And I'm not into the racializing everything. I don't like doing that.
Right.
Shouting out Media Takeout, that ghetto blog, their
mm-hmm.
opening story yesterday, they said, guess what? One of the victims was black. And they emphasized the black victim. And you don't do that
mm-hmm.
when this tragedy is not about – the tragedy is a horror show for these babies.
Correct.
That's what they were. Okay? But if you're going to go to a racial thing, I wouldn't have gone the way that they went. The problem I have is, see, Norman, even you, I want to get your opinion on this, but now we're going to have to do something when young white babies are dying.
Well, unfortunately.
But now, Obama, to his credit, threw it in as like an afterthought about what happens in Chicago.
Right.
But on this show, we talk about this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Of whether the gang violence and the shrapnel and collateral damage where the elderly and the babies in black neighborhoods are killed by the dozens. Now to be fair, I believe being fair. To be fair, this incident was a singular big ticket event.
Right.
The things happening in black and brown communities are more of a series of incidentals.
Crime.
Baby gets shot, one week, two people get shot, another week, another person gets shot. It's like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start to collect it, collectively, it's enough of a problem, even in Chicago, shouting out friend of the show, Sergio.
Right.
It's enough of a problem where they're saying they're likening it to 70s Beirut. Why wasn't it enough of a tearjerker in the black and brown communities to get to this point where it's okay, now we have to do something?
Well, now because there's a certain level of collateral damage is more acceptable in some communities than in others.
That's what I'm saying.
And that's what really has to happen. Now maybe the chickens are coming home to roost, to put it, as one person once said. And now people may finally start waking up and realizing that this is a serious. I mean, look, these people probably moved out to this part of the country to get away from that kind of urban violence. But you can't get away from this stuff. It will come to haunt you. You know, an injury to one is an injury to all. It may take a while to get there, but it will finally get there. Now people are beginning to wake up and realize we have a serious problem in this country.
And listen, Norman, and I believe in being absolutely fair, black folks and white folks, let's keep it 100, blacks and whites have grown accustomed to black death.
Oh, yeah.
Where no one, I'm not going to just say, well, it's just the white people don't care. No, it's black folks are being conditioned to be a little bit accepting of the violence in their communities as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I've seen countless photographs, Norman.
Yeah.
Young black men sprawled on the ground.
Oh,
I'm talking about teenagers and babies in newspapers now.
Yeah.
Sprawled out on the ground, blood is running from their heads, and it's just another day.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody is feeling that.
Well, yeah.
Let me finish this point.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in the gym, and I'm looking at the screen, and I'm looking at these fathers, young fathers, crying out that their babies are gone, as a black male, I was feeling it. I said, "Oh, this is rough, man." I couldn't even read the news. I could not even physically read it. I could read it for a few moments, and I had to turn away because it's just crazy. Now I can feel the humanity when you reverse it, Norman. We're not getting the same reaction.
I know. Well, look. One of the things that I hate to be kind of cynical about this, but when they showed a photograph. Either on the internet, yeah, it must have been in there because I don't have a TV where I'm at. I was looking at something online. There's a photograph, of this child. She's blonde hair and blue eyes. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, this is going to be the emblem of change. Because if it were like just the opposite, somebody, dark hair, and chocolate brown, with brown eyes, that's sort of like, that would be looked part of the price you pay for living in these sort of like, urban enclaves, but this isn't supposed to happen to a certain class of people. It's just
This is not supposed to happen here.
Yeah.
And the irony is, we're going to go to a quick musical break.
Okay.
And we're going to be honest for a little bit. I do want to talk about Rob Parker's Crazy Behind. A show called Afro Nerd has some familiarity with the term cornball black. I'll leave it at that. I might have heard that terminology at one point in my life. Oh, okay, maybe several times. I've heard of that. So I want to go to a quick musical break. But we must get to the point, even as black folks, where we believe we are equal.
Mm-hmm.
I think mentally we have been conditioned
not to believe we're equal.
And, well, you know, we're willing to accept certain things. You know.
A black state, listen, we've heard horror shows in Chicago and in New York, in New Jersey, in Oakland, and St. Louis of babies, toddlers, youngsters on in their yards, in basketball courts, and a gunshot goes out, and somebody's being maimed, has been maimed, or has died. This is routine mm-hmm. in black and brown communities, and nobody is – and you see black mothers there. We've seen black mothers
right.
visibly shaking and crying,
mm-hmm.
and nobody, even black folks, they're really not feeling it. But
right.
this time with these upper-middle-class children, they're feeling it, and they
mm-hmm.
should feel it. And right, they should feel it, but they should have felt it years ago. That's
right.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's go to a quick musical break. Listen, we have heavy discourse here, folks. This is how we do.
Mm-hmm.
The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We're going to go to a quick groove when we get back. I want to talk about this controversy with ESPN sports analyst or former ESPN sports analyst Rob Parker against RG3. Oh, boy. It doesn't get any better. This is New Eureka Soul. It's all right. I feel it. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
Okay, we're back, folks. Once again, this is Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. The captain is out because of illness, but we're expecting him back on Wednesday with a speedy recovery. In attendance, we have Norman Kelly, former line producer for Pacifica Radio, as well as an author, noted author, and we're grateful to have him through. We were talking about the tragedy in Connecticut, so I want to turn things around a little bit. It's just so heavy. We're going to have to lighten the load a little bit, even though this is a tragedy of sorts, Norman.
Yeah.
It's a tragedy of sorts that this foolish Negro had a high-profile job and screwed it around, trying to, you know, he ended up being the cornball black person that he was talking about. I want to go to a clip, but I guess setting it up, Rob Parker is or was a ESPN analyst on a show called First Take with Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless. And in all honesty, the show is all about creating controversy. They like to mix things up and talk, you know, talk kind of in esoteric terms, and you know, try to be deep on sports issues, if that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
They try to be deep on sports. But anyway, they're talking about RG3, Robert Griffin III. He's a quarterback for the Redskins. I'm pretty sure you're familiar with him.
Oh, yes. He's been making us very happy.
Yes, he's a talented young man. And he said some things that I thought really weren't up for debate.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about – he didn't try to skirt around his blackness. He just said he doesn't – I'm paraphrasing here. But he just said he doesn't really want to be measured with his talent as being a black person. Like, okay, I'm a talented quarterback. Let's not be so incumbent on my race.
Yes, he wanted to be judged by
my race. Not about my talent.
Judged by the contents of his character and his ability to throw the ball, which is perfectly legitimate.
For some people.
Yeah. Well, excuse me, I stand corrected, yeah.
Okay, for the arbiters of blackness, it's not a good thing. Now, I'm going to go in a different direction on this thing. I want to play the infamous clip, if I can find it. But actually, I don't think he should have lost his job. And I'm going to explain why. Let's go to the clip first. Okay. This is the infamous barb toward RG3. Let's get to it. We'll be back in a moment. It's about a minute. Hold on, folks.
I talked to some people down in Washington, D.C., and my question, honestly,
friends of yours, right?
Friends of mine, right, who were around in some of the press conferences, people I've known for a long time. But my question, which is just a straight, honest question, is he a brother or is he a cornball brother?
Which what did that mean?
Yeah, explain that.
Well, he's not really, okay? He's black, he kind of does the thing, but he's not really down with the cause. He's not one of us. He's kind of black, but he's not really, like, the guy you really want to hang out with because he's off to something else.
Why is that your question?
Well, because that's just how I want to find out about him. I don't know because I keep hearing these things. We all know he has a white fiance, and there was all this talk about he's a Republican, which there's no information at all. I'm just trying to dig deeper into why he has an issue, because we did find out with Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods was like, I don't want to, I got black skin, but don't call me black. So people got a little wondered about Tiger Woods early on about him.
What do RG3's braids say to you?
Now that's different, because to me, that's very urban and makes you feel like, I think he would have a clean cut if he was more straight-laced or not. Like, wearing braids is, you're a brother. You're a brother. Okay. If you got braids on.
Stephen A., what's your take on this?
Well, first of all, let me say this. I'm uncomfortable with where we just went.
All right. Enough of that. Once again, that was ESPN's First Take. What are your thoughts on this, Norman, what are your thoughts on this thing?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It just, you know, his black credentials are being interrogated. I mean, I guess, you know, as you were saying before, for some people that's not enough. They're not happy or they're not totally satisfied if he's, you know, a competent or more than competent, you know, quarterback leading the city to victory. Some people want to know if he's a real brother or a cornball brother, whatever that means. I guess it's, once again, it's back to the question of authenticity, or excuse the folk way of putting it, is this dude a real nigga?
That's basically what I'm getting out of this. And, like, Lanitude's like, you know, like, why is that a concern? I mean, there's some suspect that he may be a Republican. Well, if he's from a military family, which is from what I understand, you know, that's not too, wouldn't be too unusual if he were a Republican. And if he were a Republican, that's not a venal sin or even a cardinal sin. It seemed, and then there's something about down with the cause. Well, what is the cause? The cause of blackness? I mean, I don't know what that means, down with the cause, because it's not the 60s anymore, you know, or the 50s, where the cause was civil rights, getting the right to vote, blah, 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 blah. I mean, it seemed like much to do about nothing, and I don't understand why even Parker was suspended, because most of the stuff he said was just, it was more silly and stupid than anything vulgar or corrupt or insulting. It was just like more, yeah, you know. So, I mean, I just don't know why ESPN felt like they had to suspend him.
Well, you know something, I thought about this rather deeply, because I take this stuff personally. I don't take too many things personally, but mm-hmm. when it comes to the black authenticity thing, especially from someone who calls himself the Afro nerd, obviously I'm gonna hone in on this, because I've been hearing this most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wearing thin.
Right.
The problem I have, though, is it seems to be a bit phony on the part of ESPN to fire this guy.
Was he fired? Was he suspended?
No, well, he was suspended indefinitely.
Okay.
So he fired him, and I'm not liking it when people say certain off-the-wall things, and they lose their jobs, and then the conversation discontinues.
Mm-hmm.
This is an excellent opportunity to get to this guy's behind, to embarrass him,
right?
Sit him down and explain to him, this is why what you said is foolish. But he will never learn.
Mm-hmm.
And the public never has a teachable moment referencing Obama.
Right.
There needs to be a point where people have teachable moments to understand. Because what really irritates me about this, Norman, is the reality is he said out loud how, let's say, the blacks who control black cultural standards, how they think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if they were being respectful, we're going to respect RG3, we're going to respect them, and this is outrageous, this is wrong. Okay, if that's the case, if people really believe what he did, what he said was wrong, and it was, but they really believe that way, then they would change the current programming, the current landscape of minstrelsy on radio and on TV that we see now.
Well,
People are making a mint, Norman,
mm-hmm.
on what they qualify today as really black. When Tyler Perry is a wealthy man because he's doing what some have classified as really black.
Mm-hmm.
When you come out and do something that is different, that is alternative, that's not really black. And actually, Obama, most of his political career has been this cornball aesthetic.
Yeah, I mean,
so why are we pretending that black folks don't operate the way this man is saying?
Well, I mean, now this is interesting, because I was saying to myself, is RG3 in a pre-2008 Obama mode? I mean, remember when Obama came on the scene, you know, during the early days of when he was like flirting with the whole question of running? People were saying,
exactly.
Is he black or not? I mean, people were running around. I heard people across the political spectrum of the black intelligentsia saying that. Deborah Dickinson was saying that. Stanley Crouch was saying things like that.
Now he's an Obama fan. Now
yeah.
he's across as an Obama fan.
Oh, yeah.
I like Stanley Crouch. I like Stanley Crouch.
You know.
But he had to come around to it.
Yeah.
Because he even said in print, he's not my kind of black.
Mm-hmm. Which, meaning what, for Stanley? I mean, what is his kind of black?
But now he's very much his kind of black.
Well, I mean, can't there be, as Ture has shown us recently, there's a multiplicity of blackness? I mean,
that's the way. That's the way it's supposed to be.
Only be one authentic blackness.
Well, that's the issue, and I'm fighting it.
It's a pseudo issue, as you probably well know. It's a pseudo issue. there's never been one type of black person. I mean, there's, you know, the, you know, it's just a pseudo. I don't know where we ever came up with this idea, and I think it got frozen in the 1960s. I think that's what the problem was. A lot of this stuff, and I think I talked about this in my book, that a lot of African American politics and culture is frozen in these certain types of cultural considerations, which have nothing to do with reality, you know. And then when you run up against an Obama or RG3, you don't have any explanation for it because you're so stuck in the 1960s militant blackness, fro down with the cause sort of stuff, that you don't realize that the people who are ripping you off are the brothers and sisters who are down with the cause. But as long as they got an afro and talking to down with the cause.
Well, when he used the term "down with the cause,"
it made me
think of a Putney Swope episode.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, talk about something from the 1960s, 1970s. No better example of that is Putney Swope, the Truth
Putney
and Soul Agency.
No,
down with
Cotton
the cause.
Cotton Comes to Harlem.
Yeah.
What other show? Have you actually favorite some of my favorite movies?
What's that? Damon, there's this
Watermelon Man.
Watermelon Man. There's a 1960 movie that's based on an old 1930 movie about Uptight. Do you remember
Uptight?
I know about
that, yeah.
Huh?
Who was in Uptight?
I think Raymond
Anyone?
St. Jacques. I mean,
I mentioned Cotton Comes to Harlem. He was definitely
Yeah, it was made by Jules Dassin. It was Uptight. It's not in – I think they're going to finally release it again in DVD. But it was a movie that the FBI did not want to get out into the public because it's shown militancy. You know, brothers and sisters being down with the cause. You're breaking up. Uh-oh, you're breaking up. No, you're breaking up. I can hear you, but it's broken. Should I get off? I'm going to get off and call back. I'm going to get off.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. No, you're back.
All right, terrific.
Okay, it's fine.
All right. Live radio, folks, internet.
Yeah.
Listen, you know what? I want to play this clip, Norman. You might be familiar with this film. It's an independent film with what's the gentleman's name? He's from Oz and also from Lost. Harold Perrineau? Right. And it's the name of the movie from 2000. It's called A Day in Black and White. It's one of my favorite opening clips, and it explains perfectly. I see we have a friend Sergio coming through. Hold on, Serge. I'm going to play this clip, and it explains this whole authentic black thing. Hold on. This is about 40 seconds. Hold on, folks.
Okay.
Tupac, please. He's going to tell black people what to do. He recites some history. Please, all these gangster rappers telling black people with college educations what to do. That doesn't strike you as odd?
Okay, so you're saying that lower class blacks have the upper and middle class in check.
You know it. You'd get called Uncle Tom in a second if you went against the kind of agenda they set. Right? I mean, I'm not saying be white, but this tough guy stuff is not exactly your Stanley Kaplan formula for success. Imagine if white people were dictated to by white trash. We'd all live in trailer parks in West Virginia and be the most populous state.
My favorite clip, Norman. It explains. It's a white friend giving his telling Harold the Harold Perrineau character. What sense does it make for gangster rappers to tell educated black folks what to do? If you don't follow their agenda, then you'll be called an Uncle Tom or a sellout.
Yeah,
that is what ESPN analyst Rob Parker was getting at. Let me get to Sergio. When Sergio, I saw him yesterday.
Well, see, this has been the most intriguing thing I've been trying to figure out. How is it that the hoodlum, the thug, the dope dealer, the pusher, the quote-unquote nigger became the authentic black man rather than a Martin Luther King or a Malcolm X, people who are actually trying to do something, or the doctor or the teacher or the woman who owns a business. These are not authentic black people.
Sergio, is that you?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Wait, you were talking about Uptight?
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
I think
it's
being released.
No, I have it. It has been released on Blu-ray from Olive Films. I have it.
Right.
I have it. I watched it a few weeks ago.
Yeah, you put it on Indie or parts of it on IndieWire, right?
Yeah, it was available on bootleg, but now it's been restored on Blu-ray, and it looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And what was the point you were going to make about Uptight? Because it's like, you're right, it was directed by Jules Dassin. What was the point you were trying to make about the movie?
We were talking about how there are certain types of movies that you're not supposed to, that there's certain types of black authenticity that you're supposed to adhere to, okay? And the 60s, one of my arguments has been is that I think a lot of stuff about black authenticity still has been locked into the 1960s. And if you were a militant or something and doing things of that nature, or the good example of the cause was that those sort of activities from the 1960s. And if you want to see a good example of the cause, you know, no better example would be Uptight.
Yeah, except that they're all pretty inept.
Well, yeah.
The movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, I think this guy is a throwback from the past. I don't even know what the hell he was talking about, this cause thing. I know what my cause is. I want these Negroes to speak properly. I want their diction to improve. I want their pants to be pulled up. I want them to act more Asian. I'm going to say that I'm going to be more politically incorrect than ever. That's what I want. I want correction. Just like the great Morris E. Day said in Purple Rain, I want asses wiggling, I want perfection. It's the same thing. I want a certain type of black person to be representing, and we're not doing it. We are losing.
Well, no, we have
them.
Him. His name is Barack Obama.
Our Lord and Savior, according to Jamie Foxx, which is another problem. You know, I'm being somewhat jocular for the audience, but what really, if there's a cause, the cause is we have to root out our dysfunction. That's the cause, and I tell you, part of the dysfunction is what this gentleman had talked about, pointing the finger at who is the real black and who's not.
Yeah, but from what I understand, this guy, this Rob Parker, is notorious for saying outrageous stuff. That's his shtick. So the reason he was on this show, or he got a gig on this show, which I understand is some sort of talk show,
yeah,
and not really like a real sports news reporting show, is because he says outrageous things. That's why they put him on the show. Unfortunately, it backfired on them, and what he said was so outrageous, they had to remove him from the show.
Well,
and also you can argue, does he even really believe what he says?
I mean, it's entertainment. I mean, most of these shows, like all these news cable shows, talk shows on MSNBC or Fox, they are not about information. They're about entertainment. They're masquerading as news, but they're basically their entertainment. I mean, the same thing with this show. I mean, you know, it's not really a news show about sports, you know, looking at the figures, talking about the plays, blah, blah, blah. They're just saying outrageous and crazy things about, you know, sports celebrities. And this thing just seemingly backfired on him. Although I don't quite see why this is so outrageous. I mean, if he went out and said something like, the man's not a real nigger, then he would have been in real trouble.
Well, he didn't say it that way.
Yeah. But if
he used the term cornball brother. But that's what he really meant.
Yeah, of course. That's exactly what he meant, right? But, you know, it's like, does he really even believe what he says? Is he, what can I say to be more outrageous? What can I say to make headlines this week? despite that, what he said was completely idiotic. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he had the right to say whatever he said. What he said was completely stupid. I'm not sure. Well, probably ESPN will probably bring him back, I'm taking a guess, after a cooling off period.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he's going to issue any kind of apology. That I would like to see.
You know, some mea culpa.
Well, you know,
yeah,
the thing
which
that gets
actually
me,
won't be sincere, but I want to see if he's going to say it anyway.
Well, the thing that gets me, and I said this before, is that, you know, why all this politeness now? You know, now we're saying, well, this was a racist statement he made. Excuse me, this is a racist statement he made, and we have to do something about it. But then the landscape is as quote unquote niggerish as ever. That's the product. If we're being so respectful for what he said, you know, be respectful saying, listen, he said what's wrong, and he, you know, there's no such thing as a cornball black. Then why did Obama go through all that hell for the last 5 years with him being perceived as one? You can't get respectful programming on radio or on TV now. T.J. Holmes is having difficulties now from having a 5-day-a-week show to a 1-day-a-week show because he's on the Mistral channel right now, BET. And even he had said there were lengthy discussions as to whether he should even wear a tie on that show because of the perception of it. So if you can't even have learned Negroes, intellectual black folks, you can't even have them on these programs.
Well, what
so
do you need?
Why are we acting like what Robert Griffin's what Robert Parker said was controversial when the landscape acts pretty much under the belief that there is such a thing as what is really black.
Well, because as I said, what I alluded to last night, I think for a lot of people, what they're fearing is that with people like Obama and other people, Susan Rice and other people, a lot of black people are saying that, wow, I think now we're going to have to step up our game, and I'm not capable of doing that. So instead of trying to reach that level, I'm going to regress back because that's safer, and that's something I know I can do.
Listen, I never once questioned Barack Obama's blackness because I got into his history. You saw his wife. His wife was very well heeled. I hate to go there. A brown skinned woman. All that mixed in with it. He studied under Derrick Bell.
Mm-hmm.
All this stuff that you start when you went to found his way at Reverend Wright's church. All these things showed a certain direction that he was in, and black folks still wanted to label this guy some kind of whitewashed black man. There's no indication of that.
Well, see, this is very interesting. Look at the likes of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, two well-spoken individuals, diametrically opposed, on the political spectrum. Nobody ever, I mean, some of the militants would question King's blackness, so to speak. Nobody would ever question that about Malcolm X. And Malcolm X wore a suit, tie, had glasses on, spoke well. I mean, so what had happened in two generations in regard to that?
Unfortunately, we got about a minute, so we're going to have to pick this up on Wednesday. You're welcome to come back again, Norman, for part two.
Oh, okay.
But I'll say it quickly, and I'll give you an email on that.
Okay.
But the deal is you didn't have a thriving minstrel industry in the background doing the watermelon dance with Dr. King and El Hajj Malik El Shabazz. It's a different landscape now. You do have black clowns with voices. Yeah, that's it. You didn't have Moms Mabley didn't have an opinion like the way that Jamie Foxx does. It's a different landscape. You know, we had a whole legion of tight black folks. You had Adam Clayton Powell Jr. You had James Baldwin. I mean, we had some powerful black folks representing.
So
and
we
now,
don't have that same
have
level
now.
Of intelligentsia nowadays? Is that what you're saying? I mean, if so, how do you explain somebody
We have clowns. We have clowns. We have clowns. Listen, we got a minute. Second, gentlemen, as always, we appreciate the support. We're trying to do something different here, and you are definitely helping us with that, bringing a different kind of perspective, different kind of radio, gentlemen. We're dangerous now, I think. We're dangerous. All right. As always, Sergio,
appreciate you coming through. And, Norman, if you could come through on Wednesday, we'll do it again.
Okay.
Listen, folks, the Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. Captain will even be back on Wednesday, hopefully. Let's go on out on Suburban Alternative. This is Dope Sagittarius. Dope Sagittarius. We'll be back on Wednesday. It's been real. Appreciate it.
Everlasting, the lingua that I'm fashion. Lyrical bows, igniting up tones, presently blasting. From Hong Kong to Aspen, and when he dancing, shorties be asking. One, then I come up into the home. Two, it's okay to bless the phone. Three, is when I start to impede. I don't give them what they want, I give them what they need. Aromatic, these language acrobatics. Not a professor, but thanks for asking. My didactic groans make the groans moan. Got you drinking Kool-Aid like I'm Jim Jones. Now we crafting, you be waxing. Basking in the booty rum, that be backing. Clapping, I'm reacting like I never really seen it happen.
Bad boy from the Harlem Sound, feel that pound.